previously on Podcast Without Pretense.
Just call me Angel of the Morning.
You know, I don't know what to explain about that bouncy ball you saw going by, but it just happens every 3 days. So let me know when you see it again.
I mean, we call them fans, but really they're masochists who just keep making us watch these movies.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Strickland.
Hi, I'm Maya Zaktar.
I'm Eric Sandine.
And together,
like, I have to be there.
we're so done. We're bird people.
We're maximum done.
Maximum yeah. done. So
we're sorry.
We're very sorry. Before we jump to the discussion of this week's movie and the whole spiel about why we do that in the first place, anyone have anything else they want to talk about before we chat about bird people?
Today, not so much.
Eric and I were talking before the show, Ayaz, about how we've both been losing weight, so... we're both getting in much better shape than we were. Eric didn't have as far to go as I did, but
I don't know if that's true, but I seem to be relatively on that front from what I remember.
Is it consistent or consistent?
In shape ish. Yeah.
Yes, I'm in shape ish. That's what I'm working on. I'm trying to get rid of the ish part. Yeah. Still working on that myself. I've seen a lot of movement on the scale, but it's like, by the way, now you're getting muscle mass, which is great, but the scale says you weigh the same. I'm like, but the body fat went down. So I'm like, all right, I'll take it for now. Things are looking a little bit better. This is my exciting weight loss story. I got to use the next notch on my belt. Super excited about that.
I'm right there with you. I've been wearing this. I'm still wearing the same few pairs of jeans that I've had. I haven't gone out and bought new ones yet, largely because I want to wait until I'm at the weight I want to be at, or the weight I feel like I need to be at. And then from that point, then I'll go out and buy new ones. So of course I have to wear a belt now because I've lost several inches around the waistline and had to buy a new belt.
Wait, you didn't wear a belt before?
No, I wore a belt before, but the belt was...
What kind of Neanderthal doesn't wear a belt? Like, are we humans, Jonathan?
sometimes I did... Well, I mean, there's getting to a point where I wasn't going to need a belt for size 34 jeans. That was was part of the reason why I needed to start losing weight. So I've lost nearly 40 pounds at this point. But I'm 1 pound, 1 pound away from 40 pounds down. 1 pound away. The belt I had, it was too big for me. I had to go out and buy a new one because the one I had, like, even on the last hole, it wasn't enough to keep my pants up. So bought a new belt. And then when I started on that new belt, I was on the third hole, you know, from the end. Then I went to the fourth hole, and now I'm on the fifth one. So I have lost... I don't even know what size pants I should wear now. I haven't gone shopping yet because I said, like, I've got about 4 more pounds to lose. So, and then I think I'll be done. I'll assess at that point and see if I'm done and if I need to switch to maintaining weight as opposed to losing weight. It had been challenging until the Renaissance Festival started. And then that didn't make it challenging anymore because I'm burning so many calories on the weekends. According to my Fitbit, which I can wear under my costume, the costume completely covers it. At the end of my first day, when I got to time to see how many calories I was allotted for the rest of the day, because I'd already logged breakfast and lunch, it said I had 3,600 calories left to eat for dinner. I'm like,
We all know what Jonathan's next pants will be: leggings, guaranteed to fit with any weight fluctuation.
I've got a pair of tights upstairs, actually. So
there you go, Jonathan in tights.
Yeah,
Well, so I mean,
that's actually normal.
Really hoping the cod piece comes back. In
I mean, Vogue. In general, most of those How Stuff Works videos are probably like chest up at least, right?
Yeah, so the tights are fine. I can get away with not wearing pants at all if I want to.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's been a really interesting journey. Now for me, it's been a really, you know, long one. It's not like I shed weight super fast. I started this, if you remember, way back in August when I started doing Soylent pretty regularly. That was more of or less an experiment. I dropped probably almost 15 or 20 pounds on that first run. Well, probably closer to 15. And then the holidays hit and I slipped, and it wasn't until January and I was back up to like maybe 185 when I started really concentrating on counting calories and, you know, logging my meals and walking more. And now I'm down to 154. So it's the lightest I've weighed probably in 10 years. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. The weird thing is Jonathan is actually 6'2". So he's a little frail right now.
Right. I'll snap like a twig.
Eat a sandwich, please. Yeah.
It's funny because we have there's at the Renaissance Festival, there's this one little tea room, and it is run by a chef who is a friend of mine, and he's great, and he's very innovative with various types of recipes for different treats. He does a lot of like scones and trifles and cookies, all these kind of baked goods that look amazing. And he saw me as I was walking by during a rehearsal before the festival had opened, and he yells at me, "Get in here and eat something, you skinny bitch." And at that point I was like, okay, I love you. Thank you. That's awesome.
So if you're listening, go compliment Jonathan on his weight because he really likes it. Just go hit him up on Twitter.
I do. I've worked really hard, Eric.
At that skinny bitch is Jonathan Strickland.
It is kind of crazy to look at old forward thinkings and look at how big I was getting and compare it today. I mean, you can even see it in my face. It's pretty dramatic. So, but anyway, I look forward next to following Ayaz's lead in exercise. Cause you know, really I've just been doing a lot of walking. I haven't done any real strength training or anything. So I want to get on that next.
I will.
Yeah. I just finished.
I will quickly say how much. Oh, sorry. Ayaz, go ahead.
Yeah. I was saying, I just finished Vanity Max 30. It took me forever, but I finished the damn thing. And it kicked my ass, and it was really well. It was a really good program. So I'm going to do it sort of again, but mix in harder weight training. So that's the next plan. You were saying, Eric?
Oh, I was saying I'm really enjoying. So I started climbing because I figured out that I really like that after going for like the first time. It's because it's just puzzles, right? I like puzzles. Mm-hmm. You figure out where to move things like that. But the reason I go climbing all the time is because I joined a gym, which I'm paying money for, and I still use Swarm, which if you remember Foursquare, it's now Swarm.
Yeah.
And there's a dude who is a day ahead of me for becoming a mayor of the gym. Like, seriously, every day I go, it's like, you're one day away. And I'm like, how does that dude get here more than I do? Like, I'm here 5 days a week. I have to kill myself to beat this guy. So anyway, yep, the badges work. The mayorships work on me, at least. And I have to keep going to the gym, just become the mayor.
Clearly, all you need to do is find out what equipment he uses regularly and sabotage it.
Right. I think he's going for, he must be going for yoga or like one of the classes, like, yeah, something like that. I can't figure it out, but I haven't seen him either.
I haven't joined my gym yet. I keep on talking about it and I just haven't I haven't done it. I gotta get off my butt and do that. I mean, the festival stuff is keeping me really active, and it does turn out that sword fighting does burn a lot of calories, so that's good. But I don't think I'll be doing that post festival, so I gotta replace it with something.
Wait, you can keep doing it. I just,
yeah, can you find a fencing gym? I mean, that sounds like,
actually, yeah, there is one that's not too far from me. There is a guy. There's a guy who trained Olympic fencers who lives not too far from where I live and does classes, but I haven't gone to check that out.
Well, do that.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
That's a win-win. Yeah,
I'll just get whacked over and over again.
But you could get better at either getting whacked or do the whacking.
I mean, I go to the climbing gym, I fall on a mat. You get whacked in the face with a sword. It's the same thing, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
You're right. It's a little different doing it for stage combat than it is for doing it for realsies, but that's fine. But
you'll be so much better at stage combat, or you're going to be really, really dangerous. Better. Either way, people are going to want to watch.
Maybe. We'll see. Because he lives somewhere near here where I live, like within a mile. So it wouldn't even be a difficult thing to get to. So maybe. I'll let you know.
New Olympic class fighters were trained in Atlanta. This is new knowledge to me.
I don't think that he was, when he was working with Olympic athletes, they necessarily lived in Atlanta. I think he relocated. But that's because he put out a thing on Nextdoor saying, hey.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Nextdoor.
Let's get into Nextdoor next. Let's not talk about this movie. This conversation is going well.
No, so my Nextdoor has a couple of the things you would expect, you know, like white people scared about ethnic people moving into their neighborhood. That's a big thing. Sure. Big thing here. But you also occasionally get a guy saying, hey, I used to teach fencing and I could do it again if you want to come by. I've even got extra equipment, and just posted it out there. And a friend of mine tagged me when she saw that and said, hey, if you're interested, because I think he's even doing free fencing lessons. So it's kind of crazy. But I haven't pursued it. I'd have to look and see if I still have the email, actually. But my friend definitely still does so.
Is it your movie pick next week? Whose pick is it?
It's my pick.
Okay. I think your pick should be going to fencing lessons and then coming back with a review.
To be fair, first of all, fucktard. I was the guy who had to watch the whole goddamn movie by myself.
Nobody said you had to watch the whole movie.
No one said that. That's true. That is not a rule.
Son of a bitch.
I mean, you could go to, I was actually thinking about this, like, what if we just talked about things and we didn't, like, things we did where we didn't check our phones, like hiking, climbing, fencing lessons.
Yeah.
And you're like, I was fencing for like an hour and a half and I didn't even look at my phone.
Well, I mean, like, if we did that, then for the next several weeks, you would have to hear me talk even more about the Renaissance Festival, because I don't have my phone on me when I'm working there. And trust me, like, I'm tired of talking about it, and I love talking about it. So, but well, we'll see. I'll let you guys know. I don't know if the guy's still offering it, but I will check it out because I think it would be kind of cool. It's a different way of being active, that's for certain. Let's talk about this movie and get it over with.
All right. Yeah.
I have several pages. I've got 3 pages of notes. Well, really, 2.5.
God damn it, Jonathan.
Look, I watched the whole damn thing.
Envelopes. I've got envelopes this time. Because I didn't want to take notes on my computer because I know there was no way in hell I would survive. But
envelopes. It's so bad. It's so bad.
Okay, we can do times. Let's not even do the explanation. Let's assume anybody listening to us has listened to this before. If you haven't, we watch shitty movies and sometimes review them. Moving on.
I love that you're like, let's not explain it. Explain it. And then
that's all I got.
All right.
I'm not. Yeah.
How long did you last?
I made it 11 minutes in. 11 minutes.
Ayaz?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have one of my famous, technically, possibly zero. Here's why. So I hit play on my television and then I turned around and I was looking at my phone because the screen was on, and then it started playing and I was like, oh shit. Am I out? Am I already out? But I didn't count that. So not counting that, 36 minutes and 53 seconds. Thankfully,
That's impressive.
I got a text from Liz, and I'm like, I will look at this, and it could be about anything, and I'm fully glad to check it. It was about coming home, which was
great. How did you make it 36 minutes without just, like, were you high? I really do not know how you made it 36 minutes.
I was eating dinner during it. I was having a salad very slowly.
Yeah.
How about you, Jonathan?
I made it. I tweeted about this, but I made it 20 minutes in. And this was the first time ever that this has happened to me. The movie was so goddamn boring that this wasn't even a conscious decision. I picked up my phone and looked at it and started messing around. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I realized as I was activating two dots so I could play a fucking game while the movie was playing, I was like, wait, I'm not supposed to do this. And it was not a conscious decision. Every other time we have ever done one of these, I had made a choice of I'm stopping here, opening up a second screen or something, and then I'll start again. Yep. This time it was sheer boredom. So
speaking of which, did any of us mention the movie? It was Maximum Overdrive.
Maximum Overdrive. If it were Maximum Overdrive, it would have been fun to watch.
Yeah,
it was Maximum Ride. No, Maximum Ride. Jesus Christ. Maximum Ride.
I wasn't trying to be funny. Anyway. I mixed it up. I honestly mixed it up.
Jesus. Maximum Overdrive is based off of a Stephen King screenplay, and it is god-awfully awesome. It's got Emilio Estevez in it and a Green Goblin semi-truck. Maximum Drive might be a movie, but who the fuck cares? Maximum Ride is a film based off a young adult fantasy series written by James Patterson. Which, by the way, I read the synopsis for the book series, and it is batshit insane.
Now, when I was seeing the credits go by in the beginning, I was like, oh, maybe it's a James Patterson, but it's the James Patterson, right? Like the famous author, not just like an extra T in Patterson or anything. It's very confusing.
It's Charles Dickens with two K's who wrote A Sale of Two Titties.
It might have been a better story than this.
I want that to be true.
It's a Monty Python joke. It's not my joke. It's there's a great bookshop sketch. Yeah, no, it is a good joke. That's because the people of Monty Python wrote it, not Jonathan. If Jonathan had written it, it would not be that good. All right. So who wants to do notes? I've got two and a half pages.
Well, how about you want to pick up after I've got like an envelope. Well, in the back of an envelope, and then I end up here, and that's it because I checked out.
Let's have you start.
Okay. Maximum Ride starts with kids being rescued by Jeb. Title sequence screams TV pilot. Girl narrator's running. Kids in a house. You can see how much I'm paying attention to this movie right here.
Yeah.
The characters. Angel is a girl. Is she a mind reader? She doesn't seem to talk. There's Nudge, a girl who likes shopping and is apparently fast. Then there's a boy who builds bombs. His name is later to be revealed as Gazzy. Not Gassy, but Gazzy. The erasers are the bad guys. There's the teen blonde leader. Her name is Max. She's also faster, stronger, and bigger than Nudge. She has wings. At least they explained that early on, as does everybody else eventually. The teen boy who was sarcastic, his name is Fang. Blind kid, who is also a teen boy, his name is Iggy. So very important right there. Jeb's return is important to Max. Ari is the kid left behind at school, by the way. He has a convenient, recognizable scar. It's shot like a TV show, too. 1613. I paused the movie because, I also hit play again. Angel gets in trouble outside of the house, caught by two guys. Max swoops in to save Angel. Wolf Boy interferes. It's Ari. It's flashback time. Ari and Max at school. Ari identifies Jeb as my dad. Okay. Max wakes up. Yeah. All the kids decide to get Angel back. They will go to the school, but they don't know where it is. They go through Jeb's stuff to find out. So Fang and Max head to the school by flying. If they don't want to be exposed, take a fucking car. Because they want to lay low. Why are they flying?
That's true.
Very high.
Yeah.
None of them have ever driven a car before.
they could have walked or taken the bus. At the school, shadowy man asks, "Where's Ari?" At the house, there's Ari. Stalking Nudge, stalking everybody. Nudge is on the PC trying to find out information about themselves. Gazzy shows up. They thought they were test tube babies. The captions explain that Iggy can hear Ari whispering, which is very helpful, by the way. The captions spoil some shit in this. Ari's in the house asking where Max is. Gazzy, what was that?
I'm just laughing at the fact that the captions spoil things because I forgot always watch these movies with captions on.
I always have that. I'm paying attention. Gazzy defends Iggy. Nudge attacks. Neither are very effective. Gazzy works on his bomb and then throws it. Then there's a giant cheat in the movie as Iggy flies Nudge and Gazzy to safety and as the bomb explodes. It's an impossible location because Nudge is like all the way on the right and Gazzy's all the way on the left and Iggy's in the back. And then the explosion is ready to happen, and then they're seen flying out, which is bullshit. All right. House is blown up. Ari's hand pops through. At the school, first-person point of view of being on an operating table, now testing Angel. She's playing some kind of training game. If she touches the wrong spot, she is shocked. Meanwhile, the flying idiots are keeping a low profile by flying very high, but they definitely seem visible. The effects are very Buffy or maybe Hercules level. Kevin Sorbo time. At Moab, Utah, flying twins take a break. By the way, the wings just sprout out of their backs and disappear conveniently. The two drink water and talk about thinking. That's good. A crime.
I had a question about this. I had a question about this really quickly. When I realized they could all fly, they showed them and they're all wearing riding gloves in one of the first scenes, which is weird because people don't wear leather riding gloves around. Unless it's a new trend that I didn't know about. And I was like, maybe that's a thing. Okay, it's not. She's wearing a tank top that's sheer and a few of them are wearing it. And I'm like, that's kind of weird. Is that a thing I don't know about too? And then I'm like, okay, wings. Great.
Yeah.
And then I'm also like, her sports bra though, is that also custom made? Because so they show the guy with the scars in his back at some point, and they're all the way down his back. So I assume that when the wings come out, they come out in a giant long thing from their back. So yeah, I spent way too much time thinking about how is she still wearing this sports bra if the wings are coming out?
You're jumping ahead a little bit, but they do show there's a scene with Max. She's in a room by herself, and you actually do this. You see the slit that opens up in her back to see the wing come out. And it's not as, I don't think it's as long as the guy's, so that way maybe the sports bra is underneath it. Or
maybe.
I don't know.
But why is the guy so much longer in the bathroom scene from the first 5-10 minutes?
Because his wingspan is bigger. If you paid attention, if you paid attention in the opening credits.
Yeah, that's right. I had a note. I totally had a note that was, I'm not paying attention to these credits. Oh, crap, they're revealing stuff. And then I started reading them.
Yeah. Yeah, the opening credits have dossiers on each of the members of the flock. And they give you details like the wingspan of each character and all that kind of mess. But it's all done in a way where you can't really read any of it properly unless you're pausing the movie every 5 seconds.
Yeah. Anyway.
Back to the flying idiots the flying idiots in Utah. They hear a crime. Max wants to swoop in and against Fang. Wait, that's not right. I missed a line. Excuse me. Max wants to swoop in. Fang is all low profile. Max is all, I can pull this off. Max pretends to listen to Fang, but doesn't. Assaulting man is pulled off victim girl by Max because they don't have names yet. Max beats up attacker.
Victim girl.
I have to identify for notes. Max beats up attacker whose name is Jake. Jake shoots Max. Fang shows up and puts Jake's head through a window. Victim says, or actually her name is Ella, says her mom is a doctor and can help. 36 minutes and 53 seconds in, second screen time. All right. Fang tries to save Max, who is dying of a bullet wound to the shoulder somehow. I didn't quite get that. Ella asks mom to save Max. Fang hides. Flashback. Max at school. Pre-op stuff. Now, Max wakes up in a pink room. She has a new shirt on. No sleeves allowed for anyone in this movie. This is when I started noticing that nobody had sleeves at all.
Exactly.
It's not till later that they show the wings thing. I mean, fully. Ella thanks Max and invites her to breakfast at Cannonville, Utah. Nudge, Gazzy, and Iggy are walking. Nudge wants to go shopping. Ari is brooding and following. At Moab, Max is healing to the max.
Yeah.
Max finds out she has a tracker inside her or something. Dr. Ramirez says, we will always be there for you. Max shows off the wings in a room to us. Her skin slices open, then the wings come out clean, which I think is a little strange. You know, if they were inside, shouldn't they be goopy or something? I don't know. She takes her shirt
off. Look, Wolverine's claws came out clean in all the X-Men movies. So
they're supposed to have a bit of blood on them, though. Well, that's also PG-13. You know what I'm talking about there. She takes a shirt off.
Logan was rated R.
And there was blood on the damn things.
Anyway, carry on.
She takes a shirt and cuts the sleeves off because no sleeves allowed in this movie. That's end of envelope one. All right. Envelope two. Fang is all ticked at Max. The two fly away. Bye-bye, Moab. 4738. I tire of this movie. At Lake Mead.
I tire of this movie. No, sir. I was like you once.
Movies in quotes. I think you heard that. At Lake Mead, halfway to the school, because they mentioned that in the beginning, that Lake Mead will be where they stop while they're trying to get to the school. Max and Fang take a break. Fang asks, how is your shoulder? And Max says, seriously? That's all you're going to say? My note is in all caps. Did they not talk on the flight over at all? Like,
they don't like to chat.
It might be a lot of work. Like, it might be a lot of work. I mean,
they're also not big on just chatting while flying. I understand that. I fly a lot, and I don't like to have someone chatty sitting right next to me on a long flight. So
that's true, but you could always fly away. Cliched crap. Max wants to be better than the humans. Fang is all, we don't have to save them, Professor X. That's not what he says. We're close to it. Notices somebody's outside. It's Iggy. At the school, shadowy man is revealed to be Jeb, thanks to the captions. At this point. I'm like, oh, they're not supposed to say that. Oh, but they did.
Too funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was obvious. It was obvious who it was going to turn out to be anyway, but that was because the movie handles it poorly, not because you were meant to know who it was.
Like, there's meant to be a reveal scene, and that's where I end up stopping the movie. So at Lake Mead, the kids wonder if it's not a they wonder if it's not a tracking chip in their backs. Max gave Ari, really Jeb's son, a scar on his face using scissors. Flashback, Max in a cage. Ari talks and calls Max a freak, essentially. Ari teases Max with freedom via key card. He hits scissors behind his back. Now we're back to now. Yeah. The adventure is apparently in real time. It's supposed to take a day and a half. God, this movie's slow. Come on. Max goes to the lake to confront Ari. Ari talks smack. Fangs saves Max for a minute. Now all the kids confront Ari, but Ari also has a team. Ari hits a button on a device and all the kids hit the ground holding the ears. Now we're back at the school. Jeb says, don't worry, to Angel. And then all the kids are back in cages. Angel can talk, by the way. She actually says something here. Apologizes. In walks Ari, takes Max to a white room with no black curtains. That's a song reference. Max meets Jeb, who has cookies, and that's it.
Okay.
Jonathan probably watches this better than me, but he like kind of there's a weird back and forth between the two of them that doesn't really make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense unless you know the books, and then it makes sense. But the problem is that if you were trying to attract new people to this series, it's an abject failure because you know so little about, like, with a book, you have time to get to know characters and presumably start to care about them. I never cared a shit about anyone in this movie at all. And so I didn't care about betrayals. I didn't care about twists. I didn't care about Jeb kind of gives this secret message to Max. It's written underneath the cookies.
This is my favorite scene, actually, because he asks her what she thinks is happening. And she says something between you were trying to save us or this was all a sham. And he says, well, that's just two ends of a spectrum. And generally the answer is somewhere in the middle. And then 30 seconds later, he says, no. Science either has a right answer or a wrong answer. And there is no middle ground here. You were a success. which I thought was ridiculous in this scene, mainly.
Yeah, that's really, it's really great.
That science is all for good, which
yes,
is not apparently true.
Yeah. There's a lot of reference to that the flock are the result of some sort of scientific experiments and are meant to be saviors to humanity in some way. Right. In a later scene, we get a voiceover from a mysterious woman who becomes important in the books, but we don't know who the fuck she is in this movie because they never bother to explain anything. But the woman is clearly at a rank higher than Jeb. One of Jeb's underlings is reporting to the woman and saying, "Hey, by the way, this Jeb guy, he seems to be having an emotional attachment to the flock. Probably a bad thing. We should probably get rid of him." And the woman says, "Well, the fact that he's soft is one of the reasons why he was so effective at what we needed him to do. But you should never forget that these people are weapons, and that if they are out of control, we'll just destroy them because they're not human. They're weapons, and we have other facilities with other types of experiments." They don't go into any other detail. And so that's the only time you hear anything from this woman. So there is some implication there that Jeb was in fact on the side of the kids, at least to some extent, but not as far as they thought originally, because it's revealed essentially that the escape from the Institute and hiding out in the house for a couple of years was all orchestrated as part of this grander experiment. And that in fact, they had never really managed to escape because they still had those tracking chips in them, which told the Institute where they were at all times. Yeah. So here are my notes that go back and forth. And I ended up at one point just jotting down notes quickly because I didn't bother taking them the second time I started watching this movie. So the first time I finished it right after the sequence where Max jumps in to save victim girl from douchebag boy. And then when I jumped back in, I didn't bother taking notes. So I wrote down notes after the fact, which by that time I'd forgotten everyone's characters' names besides Max and Jeb. So I'll probably have some shorthand when I get to that, but here are my notes. So, watch for about 20 minutes. And this is a first. I picked up my phone to check stuff without even thinking about it. That's how much this movie lost me. It wasn't even a conscious decision to stop watching. I just reached for the phone. So I guess these are bird human hybrids. And it's weird because where the hell do their wings go when they're not flying? We later find out they go inside of them, which makes no sense because it would displace other really important squishy parts that they would need to live.
They're big wings.
And they are tiny people, especially Max. Yeah, she is like super skinny. So skinny little Canadian Max in the middle of Death Valley, who, by the way, was raised, I assume, in Death Valley, but apparently by Canadians due to her accent. The flying effects in this are hilariously bad, like worse than CW TV show bad. I later thought, I didn't write this down in my notes, but the Hawkmen in the 1980s film Flash Gordon were more convincing than the bird people in Maximum Ride. And that's 1980 Brian Blessed flying through the air special effects. Anyway, our heroes are six young bird human hybrids, at least three of whom were rescued from a place called the School by a man named Jeb, who is the father of another kid whose name I don't know. That turns out to be Ari. The leader of the group is a young lady named Max. Then there's Angel, a young girl with telepathic powers. Then the rest. I say the rest because I haven't picked up their names yet. The six, known as the Flock, according to documents in the opening credits sequence. And by the way, those notes were more irritating than helpful because they didn't stay on screen very long, have holed up in a place called The Nest. And I really hate this movie already. It's a big house in the Pacific Northwest. So I hate all the bird terminology. The Flock, The Nest. It pisses me off. It just seems so Stupid. One of the guys has big scars on his back, which I first think means his wings that were surgically removed or cut off or something, but he flies later on, so I guess that's just where the wings come out. Otherwise, I have no clue where the wings go when they're not flying. Apparently, each person has different abilities. Like, for example, one guy has the ability to be totally blind. There's a young boy who can make
That'd be Iggy.
Iggy has the ability to be totally blind. Yeah, I gotta admit, that one got me too. There's a young boy who can make electronics and bombs. That's the gas man. Turns out in the books, you find out he's called the gas man because he passes gas a lot. Apparently, his character, like, that's one of the side fun
and clever to introduce into this film.
Like, one of the side effects of the experiments on him is that his gastrointestinal tract is off, and so he farts a lot. So he's called the gas man. He can make electronics and bombs. Nudge is a young lady who wants to be a regular teenager and is obsessed with shopping. The three older kids are going to go on a rescue mission to save Angel, the telepath, from some folks who kidnapped her for some reason. Those folks included Jeb's son, who is some sort of vampire kid or something. His name is Ari. Later on, find out he's an eraser, and erasers are apparently wolf-human hybrids. So the flock are bird-human hybrids, and the erasers are wolf-human hybrids. I didn't know that until I read the Wikipedia entry, because it's never really explained as far as I can tell in the movie.
Never explained why they're vampires. It's never explained.
But they're not. They're wolf. Yeah. He looks like a vampire. Right. He looks like, his eyes go black and he's got the fangs and everything. He doesn't always have the fangs. So note, I ended up going to Wikipedia to read up on this since the movie isn't doing a good job of explaining things. This is what it said. The flock, Maximum Ride, the leader, Fang, Iggy, Nudge, the gas man, and Angel. These children, ages 6 through 14, are far from normal. They are only 98% human, while the other 2% is avian, giving them wings and special powers. And why the heck? Yeah.
Fair enough. Whatever.
Max's name is Maximum Ride?
That's her name. It's on. Oh, by the way, you didn't watch far enough. Later on, she sees a folder with her name on it, and it is Maximum Ride. That is her name.
Yep.
Okay, that would have been a great name in high school.
I mean, the initial scene of this movie when they said like her name was Max, I was like, oh, this is easy. At least I know the main character now and the title of the movie.
Yeah. So it goes, why the heck did the folks leave the rest of the kids by themselves instead of capturing them? Because they capture Angel. And then they leave, and everyone else is left behind. So, Ari is an eraser, apparently some sort of super strong lackey, and I hate this movie. Aha! According to Wikipedia, erasers are part wolf. So the flock are part avian, and erasers are part wolf. No telling where the superpowers come from. So, yeah, that's. I don't know if the kids were supposed to be like, they already had superpowers, and then they got experimented on and turned into bird people, or if through the experiments of being turned into bird people, they develop superpowers, but some of them have powers.
Yeah.
The telepath. Well, they all seem very famous.
Sorry, go ahead, Ayaz.
I was going to say they all seem to be able to communicate telepathically. Fuck it, whatever. That millisecond delay.
you know that famous telepathic bird, right? There's so many of them. Clearly, that's what's going on here. They just
I think one of those powers. I think though. I think that only Angel is truly telepathic, and what happens is Max communicates to Angel. She thinks to Angel, like, Angel, can you hear me? Tell everybody else. Yeah. So Angel's playing telephone with everybody else because that's how Max is able to give everyone the heads up that they're going to try and escape later on. But let's not jump ahead of ourselves. This is like a super lame version of the X-Men. And man, the flying effects are laughably bad. Angel is sent to the school in Death Valley. Ari is nowhere to be seen, which tells us that he's still stalking the flock. Back at the nest, and Ari is keeping an eye on the house. He's looking kind of vampy or werewolfy. Nudge is on the house computer while Max and some other dude is away. The other dude is Fang. She sees that she has a real mom in New York, apparently. Blind dude hears Ari, charges him, gets batted aside. Other kids try to fight Ari, but he's strong. Techno Geek Boy throws a bomb at Ari, blind guy picks up the two kids and flies out as the bomb goes off. House goes up in smoke. Now we have a superimposed fire going on as our heroes move into the woods. And we cut back in, and I bet it's to see that Ari is alive. And sure enough, his fist bursts through the rubble, and I hate this movie. We're back in the school, and scientists are spending a lot of time bending over and looking into a camera. I guess this is Angel's point of view, but it just looks like a bunch of people bending over and staring into a camera, and it's dumb. Angel is hooked up to a device and forced to do some sort of puzzle and gets a zap whenever she does something wrong. A scientist recommends they increase the voltage to get more data, but Mysterious Man scientist says they've done enough for the time being and Angel should rest. I watched the rest of this movie without taking notes, so here are some highlights. So these are the kind of stuff I remembered after watching the rest of the movie. Max incited friend-zoned dude, that'd be Fang. Like, I had to differentiate him from blind guy who was also in the friend zone. So this is sighted guy who's in the friend zone. Overhear an assault in progress. So Max decides she has to step in and save a young lady, even if it means putting everyone else at risk. She gets shot in the shoulder for her troubles, largely because she insists on standing dramatically after throwing the guy around a little rather than, you know, knocking him out or something. Which is really true. Max could have totally taken the guy, but she's just standing there when he pulls a gun on her, and then she just continues to stand there, and then he shoots her.
And she can fly, guys. She can fly away.
She can fly.
She has other abilities, too. So anyway, yeah. Max gets seen to by a vet, which, appropriate. The vet tells Max she has some sort of chip in her and bird bones. Max and sighted friend-zoned dude, a.k.a. Fang, head out and eventually hide out in a cabin. Meanwhile, the other bird people try to catch up to Max, and I don't know how they know where Max is. Nudge tries to go shopping and gets admonished for it. The trio are spied on by Ari, who is tracking them, I guess. So there's this one thing where they're walking through a town. Nudge immediately walks into a shop because she's obsessed with shopping. And the only reason this scene exists is so that we can see Ari staring at them through a window. Bum, bum, bum. The three end up at the same cabin as Max and sighted friend zone dude. Not sure how they found them. Wasn't paying attention. Did anyone else pay attention to this part? How did they find Max?
So they explained that they were all going to go to the school and save Angel. And there's going to be this campsite that would be the place where they will stop before they get there. It'll be like a day and a half. Now, I don't know if they I think they mentioned the name of the camp, so I'm assuming that everyone heard it at the same time, even though they weren't supposed to. I think Iggy was on it, though, so he would know the information.
So this was the halfway point, right? Mm-hmm. I seem to remember that now. I didn't write it down in the notes when I watched it, so that's why I totally forgot about it. Thanks, Ayaz. You mentioned that earlier. I'm sorry.
No problem.
So next is that... Fang talks about how Max gave Ari his scar, and for a film that's filled with flashbacks, you'd think we'd get a fucking flashback actually showing this incident, but instead, we are told rather than shown. This drives me nuts because there's so many flashbacks in this movie that have no purpose. It's just, it's supposed to drive up like tension and mystery, but they don't work. Like, they're not well executed, so it's just disjointed. It reminds me of... what was it? Was it Bloodseed or whatever the fuck it was? That movie we watched where all the scenes like were out of sequence from each other. You know what I'm talking about?
Seed 2, Blood Revenge, or Blood
that's
Seed
it. That 2, something Blood like that. Valley or whatever.
Yeah.
It reminded me of that, except we really just had two timelines, the flashback timeline and the current timeline.
Yep.
But it seemed really disjointed. So this is what drives me nuts. After we get told about the scar and that Max gave Ari the scar when he was essentially teasing Max with scissors, like he was going to attack Max with scissors, we then get a flashback that covers the moments immediately leading up to the scarring, but it stops before the actual scarring. So first we have people telling us about something rather than showing it. Then we have the show up to the point that's important, but then we never see the point that's important. It is like the worst kind of storytelling. It is like, if you've told us about it, you don't need to show us. It would be better to show us than tell us. So what you should have done is said, have the character say, oh, Max gave him that scar. Then do the flashback. show how the scar happens, or even just leading up to the moment immediately before the scar, then go back to modern day. Don't tell me the story, then go to a flashback to tell me 2/3 of the story, then go back to modern day. That makes no sense. It's such a shitty, shitty thing. I mean, it drives me nuts as a storyteller to see someone tell a story so fucking poorly. Also, young Ari has horrible line delivery, and Max's Canadian accent in her older form is getting distracting. What is this? Yoga hosers?
I'm glad you got that too. I like you pointed it out on Twitter, but like yeah. after I heard
But
like,
I had already written this down.
I was just like, what is going on now?
Yeah. No, her Canadian accent gets more pronounced in the middle part of the movie. And Ari as a kid, he sounds like someone doing like almost like doing a Native American voice. He's got a very deliberate, and this is the kid version of Ari. He's got a very deliberate way of delivering those lines and a very distinct accent as he does it too. The combination of which make it very distracting. Ari and a bunch of erasers all catch the bird folks who go back to the school, and goddamn, this movie was boring. I don't care about any of these characters. And so all this capture and evasion stuff doesn't matter, but they're reunited with Angel, the psychic wonder girl. Max finds out that Jeb never really rescued them, but rather their 2-year stint in the real world was just part of the experiment designed to teach them independence and help them grow as bird people or some shit.
Yeah.
Jeb tries to tell Max that there's more going on, but she's kind of fed up with Jeb's shit at this point. And Ari's. Ari tries to get under Max's skin, but she pickpockets his key card when he's not looking. And in a later scene that wasn't really necessary, the gang breaks out and fights off Ari. By that, I mean, they could have just gone ahead and had them try their escape attempt immediately after she stole the key card. There was really no need to have yet another scene. but we did get another scene. And this is the part where Max telepathically thinks to Angel, and then Angel has to pass the message on to everybody else that they're going to make an escape attempt that night. The bird people escape after some scenes that were supposed to be action but were just dumb. We see Max run down the same corridor of plastic sheets about 15 times, but it's the exact same, like it's using the same room 15 times as an escape thing.
Yeah.
Jeb tries to convince Max to trust him, but the bird people fly off, except we don't see that, probably because the limited CGI budget got eaten up. They land safely. Max immediately passes out after they escape from the school, and she has visions of what we are told is New York City, but I'll have to defer to Ayaz on that one, except he didn't watch this far, so that doesn't help.
I'm going to say no, it wasn't.
I'm pretty sure it was Vancouver. Max thinks she knows of a place that has files on all of the flock, and the group decides that they should travel to New York next, and the movie ends. Now, Nudge, of course, wants to go to New York because she thinks that's where her mom is.
Okay. Can you do less than a minute on the summary of the rest of the books? Because you've read the rest of them.
I have one paragraph. I have one paragraph for the summary. Here it is.
Yeah.
I read the synopses for the other books in the series, and they sound like they get progressively more dumb. End result, a plague wipes out all of humanity, and the only people who survive are the altered, mutated human types. For reals, yo. Oh, spoiler alert. Yeah, so what happens is eventually in this book series, you have the tortured love story between Fang and Max, and essentially they split up at one point, and Fang goes and founds his own flock because apparently there are more of these fucking mutants out there. They also evolve gills for some reason.
Sure.
And then there's a massive apocalypse that at first they think is going to be a virus. Turns out it's not a virus. It's like some sort of massive fiery event. But so everybody survives. All the mutants survive.
Yeah. I never read Animorphs, but... Is this Animorphs?
I don't know, but they're all the mutants survive. The world is turned into just cliffs and water, and since the bird people also have evolved gills, they can live on this planet where they only have cliffs and water. Fair enough. And then we get to a point where Several of the original flock in that last book die, except it's revealed at the end that they didn't really die and they're all okay. Like Iggy, the Gas Man, and Nudge are all apparently killed by a bad guy called the Horseman, but then they all turn up perfectly fine in Russia, and it turns out that their deaths were greatly exaggerated. It's so stupid.
I've been reading Discworld series again. I'm four books in.
Much better than Maximum, right?
Way better than this shit.
Yeah.
I find myself laughing and being entertained, and this seems like it has none of that.
Yeah, no, the entertainment part seems to be severely lacking. Yeah.
I forgot to mention one on the back of my envelope. But the back of the envelope said, "We'll make it like the X-Men, but the school is bad. The kids are on the run." The shittiest X-Men movie. Right there.
Yeah, this is a lot harder to pick movies now that Netflix got rid of the fucking percentage stuff. Like the stars, now it's just thumbs up or thumbs down, which makes it way harder to...
We'll give it a thumbs up.
That's okay. You don't have to pick a movie. You can pick an activity like, I don't know, fencing.
Look, I'll try and do that too, but I'm going to pick a movie because that's what we do.
Do we all have to do fencing? Wait a minute. Or is this him?
Eric says that only I have to do fencing, but I watch the goddamn Maximum.
I like this challenge.
All three of us try to fence. Within a week's span, by the way. One lesson.
What we're going to find out is that I'm going to go and take a fencing lesson. Eric's going to fucking go out and build a fucking fence. And Ayaz isn't going to bother to do it because he forgot to turn his phone off before the lesson started.
I'd steal something. Fencing. That's the, come on.
You would actually sell something that was stolen. Yeah. That's what fencing is.
If I'm up to my lingo, Mr. I know everything, how fencing works.
I'm going to pick a goddamn movie. Hang on a minute.
You know, if you don't trust Netflix, there's also Hulu. There's Amazon. Yeah. We can always go there.
I don't use Hulu, but I do use Amazon. Okay, so I'm going to pick a foreign movie. No, never mind. I'm not picking this foreign movie. I just looked at how long it is. That movie is 2 hours and 57 minutes. No, that is not going to happen.
Oh, no, I wouldn't even try that.
Yeah, no, I was like, nope, I'll be the only one to watch that yet again. I am not doing that. All right, let me find a different one.
That's the risk you run if you do something like that.
Well, no, I know. That's why one of the reasons I backed out. Also, I just don't.
It's only kind of the risk because I picked the last movie and I didn't watch the whole thing. So,
God, I hate you guys so much.
I want to watch the prequel, Minimum Ride, and then Over Maximum Drive. Which is not the title. There is a Maximum something we watched with Seagal and Steve Austin, which showed up
in the search. I'm pretty sure the prequel isn't Minimum Ride. I'm pretty sure the prequel is Maximum Stationary. Find out that the girl, before she was taken to the school, used to work in a little paper shop.
I like
it. All right, so the movie we're going to watch.
I'm so glad you work at a Renaissance festival. I am so glad.
The movie we're going to watch is called Let's Be Evil.
Oh, no.
We're going to stick with stories about altered children. While supervising a program for gifted children who wear augmented reality glasses, three chaperones find themselves hunted by their charges.
Oh, this sounds super relevant to today.
Same fucking movie that we just watched.
Well, you guys didn't make it through the first time. I'm going to give you a second chance.
See, this is why I pictured like Bob the Builder, because it's over at least in 40 minutes, okay? Because next time I'm picking something that's like 15 minutes.
Bob the Builder is just the same 7 minutes three or four times in a row.
I wasn't expecting that, but I know that now.
I mean, we've been doing a pretty good job of like picking movies that you and your son can watch.
Well, yeah, this one would have been fine.
Yeah,
I Yeah. I decided I actually was trying to pick something that wasn't a horror movie. I was looking at the science fiction and fantasy section on Netflix. It just so happens that this one also, you know, spans over into horror. But I see which one I could have picked.
Oh, it's not rated, but it wasn't a TV movie. What the fuck?
It's an independent film. It's a little independent film.
Yeah.
So now it's the next movie we're watching. That's all you need to know.
You guys, this is a total aside. Do you guys remember that movie that we watched? It was in black and white with the 15 frame per second frame rate. You remember that nightmare we watched?
Oh, was that the science fiction one?
I don't know. Some kids playing guitars in the wood. In the woods.
Oh, that one. Yeah. That was the one with Vincent D'Onofrio. He directed it. D'Onofrio.
This is my fear when you said independent movie. If this thing has a weird frame rate, I will not finish it. I guarantee that. I'm saying this now. If it's under 24 frames a second, not 23.999, that's fine. I get it. But not if it's below that, no, not watching it.
I mean, you know, I'm not gonna demand you watch it. I mean, I feel like I got my full revenge that time we made you watch the Foreign Acrobats movie.
Still an excellent movie. That was the best trip ever.
It was amazing. Yeah.
Going back and listening to that episode still makes me laugh to hear Ayaz's reaction, because your reaction was not what I expected it to be. I expected you to either be like, what, or angry, but you were laughing so hard.
I earnestly try to understand what I was watching, which made no sense whatsoever. And I desperately tried to figure out, where is it going? Does it make sense? And it's my brain just going, there's logic in this. There's logic in this. There's no logic in this.
I'm glad that you didn't just say like, "Hell, Jonathan will explain."
No, I finished that thing. That was a much different time. Shall we look to the future, guys?
Sure.
All right. Next time on Podcast Without Pretense.
Hey guys, let's be evil.
Hey everybody, it's time for Eric's phone free activity of the week. Now go.
Yeah, so I bought an Oculus Rift. It doesn't use my phone, so I spent a couple hours in there.